Hi there, I'm Gracie, your host of the podcast, and thank you for joining us on the podcast. The podcast is called The Road to Permanency, and today we will be starting part two. Part two is about education, and I have a special guest today, Ashley. Ashley, can you introduce yourself to the podcast?
Of course. Hi, everyone. Bonjour, Ashley Indigenicas. Be Maya Ugwasi Jiman Indigenicas. Migazin Dildem. Mishkigogamagan Donji. So, hi, everyone. My name's Ashley. I'm Eagle Clan. I'm from Mishkigogamag First Nation, which is up in northwestern Ontario, but I didn't grow up there because I was in foster care in British Columbia in a town called Langley, which is about an hour and a half outside of Vancouver. And since then, I've moved across the country. I lived in Montreal for a few years, then Toronto, and now I live in Algonquin Territory in Ottawa.
Thank you. That's awesome. And today we're going to be talking about education. So first I'm just going to ask you some questions if that's okay. So Ashley, can you discuss some of the barriers that contribute to your academic success and your college enrollment for former youth in care?
Of course. So, as a little bit of background, I went to my undergrad in Montreal. I spent 4.5 years over there in school and then completed my master's degree online. I think, in my experience, I think the most obvious barrier that came up when I was starting to think about going to university was finances. It's difficult to pay for university. I mean, it's not as bad in Canada as it is in the US with regards to tuition costs, but it's a lot to be able to pay your tuition and pay rent and get food and take care of yourself and make sure you have everything you need. Like, for example, laptops are absolutely essential now, and a decent laptop is quite expensive. And if you don't have the savings for it, then you're out of luck. I think that's the first barrier that comes to mind, and that's one that I personally experienced. I think another barrier that really affects enrollment and academic success is the need to finish high school, which is important, but it's difficult to make your way through high school when you're in like foster care, group home, if you're like hopping around, or if you're just in a generally unstable situation, it's really difficult to, first of all, complete high school on time. Even though like I don't think there should be a, it shouldn't be considered on time,
Time
you
limit.
know. But it's hard to get good grades when you're facing so much stress in your life, and when you don't know where you're gonna be tomorrow, you don't know what's like you don't know if you're gonna be moving homes, or even worse, you might be getting close to, well, it depends where you live, but you might be getting close to aging out, and you have to think about where you're gonna live. You don't have time for school, or you don't have time to be stressing about grades or your exams next week when you need to have like a place to live in the next month. I'd say those are two really big barriers.
Going off of what you said around like enrolling and finishing high school was probably like one of my biggest barriers ever because it's like I was living all on my own, trying to like make enough money just to afford my rent and groceries, and then also going to school, thinking about exams, thinking about grades, thinking about getting grades high enough to go into university. You know, it's like this immense pressure, and then along with that comes, you know, the whole like stigma surrounding youth in care. How I think there's this big stigma about, you know, youth in care don't finish high school. Like that's a huge thing I hear a lot of the time is like you're like a statistic or whatever, you know what I mean? So there's like this huge thing I want to overcome and like be that youth in care who finishes high school and goes on and continues to do well, you know? Like that's what we want, but there's so many barriers. And I think something that ties in with that is permanency, you know, like you don't know what your permanent situation is, and I'm constantly worried about my housing security. So I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be on the streets or out of friends, or if that friend will take me in, or if I can afford this place. You know, it's like, it's all too much going through school. So I think that's, that's like a big barrier in its own. Definitely. And I can relate to you on the money, like I didn't even know there was so many things we had to pay for. It was so unexpected, like let alone electronics. When you just want to think about enrolling, you have to pay like how much money, like $500 plus up front just to enroll in your courses. Then if you want to, you have to do a qu tuition deposit. Then you have to do, if you want to live on campus, you have to do a residence deposit, then residency. It's just like too much meal plan. Like there's just, they just throw a bunch of costs at
They
us.
do like textbooks too, because I did a Bachelor of Science and textbooks are
Yeah,
ridiculous,
textbooks.
especially like any like
Exactly.
sciencey or medical related textbook. Like I remember one of mine, like my physiology textbook was like $200, and that used up my entire stipend for textbooks for that semester, and that was just one class.
Yeah, I totally feel you. Like I have a chemistry textbook that costs like 200 bucks, and it's like bigger than me. Like it's crazy. Yeah.
No, there's
So yeah, that's definitely a big barrier. And
mm-hmm.
another thing, like I do think it's important to mention, I am at U Ottawa right now, so like I'm currently just like advocating for Youthing Care to like have a way. We're trying to figure out a way for Youthing Care to identify themselves when we become a member of like their alumni or in their university, like youth in and from care, because that's a big issue, because it comes into confidentiality and how are we going to be able to identify ourselves without someone like, giving, without us giving them permission, but they can't reach out to us. So we're trying to like come up with a way now, and we're coming up with the screening process so that when you join, you're able to identify yourself and you're able to get all these bursaries that we didn't even know were possible, right? Like, because I remember I was struggling so much my first year, but then you come to find when you graduate or whenever, you come to find, oh yeah, there were all these things available for Youth in Care, but they didn't tell us because, one, they don't know that we exist, or and they can't talk to us. So I think a huge thing is like being able to eliminate those barriers of communication and getting us our resources, making them available to us specifically, like directly, so we actually have knowledge on what we can take advantage of.
Absolutely. I think that's really important because, I mean, at my university, I went to McGill University, and they didn't have any scholarships for youth who were in care when I was there. Now I believe they have a $500 bursary, which I mean I think would make quite a
Would help
dent for
you.
students who are from Quebec. But if you're paying out of province tuition, it's like twice the cost at least. So it's $500
Yeah.
is helpful, but it doesn't go as far. And yeah, I think I didn't know at the time that there were organizations like the Children's Aid Foundation who partner with various groups across the country to provide scholarships. Like, I didn't know that existed. I knew about, because I grew up in British Columbia, I knew that they had a sort of bursary program for youth in care, but that doesn't apply outside of the province. And also, there were really stringent, like, application requirements for it. Like you had to be a permanent ward for a certain amount of years. You had to stay at school in British Columbia. I think you needed some letters, you needed to have good grades. You needed to be within the age limit as well, which wasn't a problem for me, but I've heard from other people that I believe it's in your mid-20s, I believe. And so if you're finally getting to a point where you're stable and you're in your late 20s, it's too late for you to access that bursary.
Yeah. And that's honestly something like I totally agree with you with, that I like experienced myself, like not knowing like what it is, or I don't even like fit all these like specific little things, because they think like, that they think like a youth in care is one specific thing, but like, we can come in at 17, we can come in at 60, we can come in at 3, we can. It's crazy, like we all have different journeys, and we all like definitely deserve like equitable treatment, and they need to make it that way. And like with working on the board, like they had like this whole screening process for youth in Canada to get like bursaries, and I told them, I'm like, that doesn't apply to everyone. Not everyone has been in a foster home. So like I think we need to broaden that a bit. So like that's a good thing about having my voice heard there. So and I definitely agree with you on that. Like more universities need to be doing this. And I know we have recently heard, I don't know if you've heard of this probably, but we have Nova Scotia Community College, and we also have Laurentian. We're hearing about a ton of Ontario, and we're hearing about a ton of universities and colleges in Canada who are giving free tuition to youth in care. That's something I haven't experienced, but I mean, I would love, you know?
Yeah, like I think it's amazing and it's important. I know for Ontario, there used to be the tuition program, but that was removed by recent government. But I think some universities are really stepping up now. Like Laurentian's a great example. I think they were one of the first to announce a like full bursary for youth who are in and from care. And I think that could honestly be life changing. Like it makes university far more accessible.
Yeah. It just eliminates like a huge stress, you know, and like and for people who don't even like have the money, like yeah, like there is like a lot of money from OSAP, but there also comes loans with that, and most people don't have we have the option not to take the loan, but it's like you spend so much of your time probably having to pay that loan back now, you know.
Yeah And I feel like too, if for some people they have support to pay back loans, like if your family is more stable, and once you finish your university degree, you move home, you're trying to find a job, you can have that sort of, you can have help to pay back your loans. But if you don't have that sort of support, then it can be a lot more daunting to think about taking loans. And especially when you think in the long term, like you might have some money right now, but in 3 years, who knows where you'll be at if you don't have a support system. And the thought of having a loan on top of that is quite scary.
Exactly. Like I feel like I'm putting away money now, but it's like you never know what's gonna happen as a youth in care. Like I'm always worried because it's like housing instability and all the things I feel like youth in care go through when they're young. Like they just think that it'll happen again, you know. You never know. And I just want to ask you another question. So was educational accessible to you? If yes, why? If no, why?
Okay, so I'd say that education was fairly accessible for me, but I have First Nation status and was able to apply for band funding to go to university, and they covered my tuition and gave me a stipend for living, like a living allowance each month. So I think it was more accessible for me than for most people. Of course, not every First Nation person with status has access to that sort of funding. I got lucky because there weren't many people from my community going to school, and I also had fairly good grades. So, and fairly good grades and a high financial need. So I think it just put me into that. It put me into the bracket of people who needed support. So I received it. Yeah, but without that, I definitely wouldn't have made it through university, especially. I mean, the tuition is one thing, but I think the living stipend really is really what helped me. Of course, it could have been higher, and that would have been even more helpful. But even just at the amount that it was enough to pay most of my rent. I didn't have to have a full-time job on top of going to school, like some of my friends did. There weren't very many foster kids that I knew of at McGill, but there were some that I met through the First People's House, and several of them were working one or two jobs just to be able to make rent and food each month. And I was really fortunate to have that band funding and be able to take more time to study and do my homework.
And that's good. Like, I feel like you definitely deserve that. And I definitely feel like funds like that should be more like available to, you know, all Indigenous people with status. Like I just think, like going off of what you said, like obviously you're fortunate, but I definitely feel like that you deserve that. Like Like, no matter if you had high grades or not, like, you worked for that and you like deserve that.
Yeah, it's
That's
sad
really
when they
amazing.
have to like say no to people. I know some of my friends, and they weren't in foster care, but they still have First Nation status, who didn't receive band funding, and it's I don't I wish that they could have. And that's definitely a responsibility of the government of Canada to provide that.
Yeah. And then the other question I just want to ask you is, what help support tools or strategies did you use to overcome these barriers as being enrolled in university and being a youth in care?
I guess being aware, first of all, of what is out there. I think being able to go to, we had university fairs in BC that I attended. I learned about different schools there. I also attended several programs in the summer to learn about various universities, and I think those were quite helpful because they showed me that, like, first I got to see the dorms, and then I got to see the campus, and I got to experience, I mean, it was a summer, so it wasn't the same, but I got to experience what it was like on campus and imagine myself in that situation, which I think alleviated a lot of my fears of, well, pretty much moving out on my own and going somewhere strange that I'd never been to before. Yeah, I think that, so being able to take advantage of those opportunities to get information, and also at those sort of programs and at the university and college fairs too, they the recruiters usually have a pretty good understanding of what like financial supports are available, or if they don't know, they can connect you to someone who does. And I think that's really important. And once you have access to that knowledge, then you're more empowered to take steps to go to university or to apply.
Yeah, and I feel like going off of what you said, like those like tours of like actually being on campus for like the first time, I think that's like one of the things that got me really excited about going to university. Like it's just like a big deal because you're like, wow, like this is gonna be me. Like, and I'm even though you're like working hard at the time to finish high school, it's like it's kind of like shows you what you're fighting for.
I could picture myself being somewhere else and it being somewhere that I had chosen to be and that I wanted to be. And that's really empowering and also just really exciting, especially when you're still a teenager.
Did you stay in campus like residence when you first started, or did you live off campus or?
I started on campus. At McGill, they only have enough residence spaces for first years, so I took up a dorm room in Gardner Hall. It was great. I met a ton of really cool people while I was there. I'm still friends with a lot of them. And for second year, I did have to move out on my own. Everyone did, it wasn't just me. And that was when I realized there were some complications. I think getting into the university dorms was a lot easier. But applying to places, like they want, I don't know, they want so much.
I
Like,
want a signer.
yeah, they want like all these details. They want, yeah, your cosigner. They want, like, some places wanted a credit check or proof of income. And that's when things started to get a little difficult for me because my adoptive family and I don't get along very well. And like, fortunately, we managed to keep the peace long enough for my adoptive mom to co-sign with me. But it was something that I can imagine other people would really struggle with. And if, for example, we hadn't been able to maintain that relationship, and if the adoption fully broke down during my first year of university, then I definitely would have been in a really bad position. I imagine, well, in Montreal, rent's a little cheaper than places like Ottawa and Toronto, so I probably would have been able to get by informally subletting from someone, but that would be really unstable.
Like sublets and room for rents are like really unstable situations. You always have anxiety.
You like don't know who your roommate's gonna be. It's not.
Exactly. I just want to like touch upon that too. Like, I think like in university, like there can be like a big feeling of housing insecurity in itself. So like that's another barrier you can face. Like for me, like my first year, like I came down here to Ottawa from Barrie, like all on my own, and I didn't really know what to expect, and I just moved into residence. And at first, I was staying with my boyfriend, but I had to like move into residence earlier because his sister was coming down to like live with him in his apartment, so there wouldn't be room for me in there. And I remember I called residence and I was like, "Hi, like this is my situation. Like I need to move in earlier." And like no one would like push or move or anything for me. They're like, "No, you have to move in on this date." And then I was fortunate to like ask someone at Children's Aid Society to like call on my behalf because like I was like, "Can you just try this?" And they end up being more receptive to someone like
Of course.
in a place of power than me, which kind of sucks, but I mean it shows how it is.
Of course, yeah.
And I was able to get in there, which thank God I was. And I moved into residence early. It was pretty hard. Like another thing I think is a barrier is like when you probably experience this, like when you're moving into residence, like you're seeing like all these families like move in around you and you're just kind of moving in on your own, and it's kind of hard, but something I definitely got through. And then yeah, and then like going to talk about like living in an apartment, like it was crazy just to find one and then to actually like get a lease agreement. I was like fortunate in the sense that like the person like who owns this building was like really actually had knowledge on Children's Aid Society, so she was like really receptive and like was able to like help me get in here without like a co-signer and stuff. Like I just got a formal letter from Children's Aid, and then like I had my proof of income, so like that helps too. But I can imagine like youth in care who don't have like a part-time job, that might be hard too, you know? There's so many things.
There are. No, I remember when I moved into residence, like one of my adoptive parents came with me, and well, we tried to walk all my stuff up from our hotel up this ridiculously steep hill into the residence. We didn't make it. Someone had to pick us up. Like, some poor person took pity on us and drove us up the hill. But after that, I realized that everyone's parents were like staying. They were staying with their parents, and like my adoptive family and I like truly do not get along. So I was ready to be alone, and then I was like, wait, I am alone now. And everyone was still hanging out with their families. Some of them had their siblings with them. They're showing them around. I was like, oh, I don't know if I fit in here.
Definitely hard.
And then people asked a lot of questions too, and I tried to explain where I was from, and
Yeah.
they were
People ask
baffled.
so many
They
questions
do.
too. Like, that's another barrier in itself. Like, honestly, people are like, "Where are your parents? Like, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?" Like,
No.
I don't know you.
That was a bit of a culture shock. Like, I don't know if it was a barrier to my academic success, but it was definitely a barrier to my social success. When people start asking if you have any siblings or who your parents are, and I'm like, well, I've had over 40 foster siblings, and you sort of get a blank stare. Like, they think you're joking, maybe, and then they're trying to process because you're not laughing.
Yeah, like I'll say something dark and then they'll like start laughing. I'm like, "No, like I'm sorry, like this is my life." You know? It's like it's very weird. Yeah, it's definitely hard to like make friends like in your first year, like, and then that on top of it. But I mean, you meet the right people, and then when you trust them, they kind of start to understand.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was just at the very beginning, I was super lost, and I didn't realize that other people didn't have that sort of understanding of what foster care was and what adoption was and group homes and all that. And once I found my people, it was good. It just took a little.
It does. It takes a little of hope. What would you like to see done to ensure more youth can access education and training programs?
I would like to see the age limits on provincial programs for youth in care being lifted. For example, if you are trying to go to school in BC and you're in a permanent ward in foster care for the correct number of years, but you're already in your 30s because it took you that long to get yourself together enough to go to school, you're ineligible for the education bursaries. And I think that's really sad, and it's also not fair. It's not fair to expect people to be on this very tight timeline and to reach like the society's like normal idea of success by the time you're 25 or something. I think that's definitely one thing that I'd love to see lifted. So those sort of age barriers. Same with, for example, grades. Like it's important that you pass and that you graduate, but requiring people to meet like a certain grade limit to get funding to go to school. If they're admitted to school, they should be supported to go. If you get admitted to university as a youth in or from care, the government should be there to support you through that instead of saying, hey, you didn't meet our grade limit, so you're not eligible for our bursary program anymore. Or saying that you're too old now, or that perhaps it's not the right type of program that they want to support. Those sorts of barriers shouldn't be there.
Yeah, I think like definitely more equitable support, like specifically for like youth in and from care, like maybe these expectations are more like ideal for people who have the current environment and the current level of permanency to support them. You know, at that point, like most youth in care, like our biggest fear is like where am I gonna, like for me at least it was like where am I gonna sleep tonight, you know? Like that was one of my biggest fears, and like beyond all these pressures of having good grades is another thing that I think they could work on.
Yeah, for sure. I think making sure that there's that housing available and the like that support for you there too, and not just like I don't know. Sometimes when people say that they want to make sure that there's places for youth in care to sleep, they mean shelters and whatnot, but there needs to be permanent housing and also housing that's not like restrictive in the same way or in a similar way to that of funding that we just talked about. So being able to access that housing, even if you only went into care when you were 16, so you were only in there for 2 or 3 years, you should still be able to access that housing. Or if you're entering school and then you have to take a semester off, you should be allowed to stay in the housing.
Because like you might have to take a semester off for like unexplainable like reasons like in your personal life as a youth in care, and like that should be supported, you know? Like I feel like our whole academic journey should be supported and fostered, because like if they do actually want to break free from that statistic that youth don't graduate high school and all this stuff, then I feel like there needs to be adequate supports in place to actually fulfill that goal. It can't just be like all on the youth on their own, because that's a lot and only a few of us will make it, and that's unfair.
For sure. And I think that's a great point too that you make about high school, because I understand that a lot of youth in care end up leaving care without having finished their high school diploma, and there still needs to be supports for them too. There's in some places there's supports for people to go to college or university, but those aren't going to do much use if they're not also supporting youth who have left care to finish their high school.
Yeah, I know like I struggled with making meals for myself and stuff. I think that's like something we could do more of, like training on how to like cook and how to meal prep and how to meal plan. I think that's another big thing we can implement, because it's like not everyone can afford a meal plan on university, and not everyone will be able to like consistently go, because another thing is like if you're living like on a residence that isn't directly on campus, like you have to walk all the way there just to eat your meals and stuff. Like I experienced that, and I ended up like not even doing the meal plan for the second semester, because like the first semester I was just like always walking there, and then like half the time I'd be like I don't even want to like walk all the way to get my food. Like you can't bring it home or anything, you have to sit there and eat, and like unless you're eating with someone, you know.
Yeah, I get that.
So that's like another big thing. And then like second year, I'm like, oh, how do I actually like make consistent meals every day?
Yeah,
You
I
know?
still
It's like,
bad at that.
I know, it's still
Yeah,
like Uber Eats, you
still a
know?
struggle.
Like
Yeah.
Still a habit that I need to quit.
Yeah, same here, but
But definitely like doing stuff with like ACC and like doing activities through like CAST, like help, like learning how to cook and stuff. And I just feel like we need to see more of that.
For sure. I think universities and colleges could also consider having that sort of targeted support for youth who are in care and leaving care. I know that those supports often exist within children's aid societies, but there could be more done on campus and also convening groups of students together so you know other people with similar experiences to you. I found at McGill
Exactly.
there was no real way to connect with other foster kids, and as I mentioned before, the first place that I met other foster kids was at the First People's House, and we were all Indigenous. And I didn't meet any non-Indigenous foster kids until my fourth year of university, when Dr. Melanie Doucette started her she started her youth and care group at McGill, and that's when I met other foster kids, and there still weren't very many of us, but it was nice to have an actual group that got together. I think it was maybe once a month, and we could just hang out, chat about things. We also talked about what we wanted to see change at the university, or what could change, or what would be helpful. And having that space, like a dedicated space like that, was really helpful.
Yeah, that's something that I feel like is necessary to implement. Like, if I didn't actually get the chance to like interact with other youth and like learn about our like shared experiences and like connect on like a different level, like I feel like youth and care like definitely get me more than anyone else in this world will ever will, you know? And I just think that's like really important to have that like space to like be who you are without judgment.
I feel like those sort of groups would also be a space to have those cooking classes or share tips on living on your own and like, I don't know, life hacks for cleaning things, like
Yeah. Or like this is on sale this week, you know, like stuff like that.
Or like, I don't know, like some other valuable things like that I learned from other youth in care from school were like how to navigate the mental health system at the school. Like I had no clue. That was
Yeah,
one of the
that's
most
actually
confusing
something I wanted to
things.
say.
And like figuring out, like I had to figure out the healthcare system in Quebec because I came from British Columbia and I didn't know how any of that worked and didn't know who to go to or where. Like I knew where the student walk-in clinic was, but I didn't know like what else I needed to do. Yeah, having that support group and guidance would have been really nice.
Yeah, and like also another thing I think needs to improve is definitely mental health support, like all across like education, like for youth and care. Like I know like at University of Ottawa, like there's like a year-long wait list just to like be able to talk to someone. Like it's just crazy, you know? So specifically for youth and care, like we definitely need someone to talk to, and like I think like we could definitely have more support
For
for
sure.
mental health. Specifically in university and all across education, I mean, the stress with that and then everything else, it could be a lot.
And when like a lot of people enter university, they're usually young adults or at the end of their teenage years, and that's a time in your life when you're really starting to grow into yourself and you're starting to like you have more control over your life and you have a say in what you do and who you are. And I imagine that's when a lot of people start addressing their mental health like they're on their own and they can do it of their own accord. So making sure that access to mental health support, speaking counselors or psychiatrists or psychologists or I don't know, in the context of university as well, testing for any learning disabilities, because we all know that when it comes to things like foster care, sometimes they don't follow up on possible issues. So making sure that all that stuff is accessible for youth who have been in care, and also that, I mean, for everyone, but especially for youth in care.
Yeah, wow, I'm really happy you touched on that because that is so important. like I specifically need like extra time on my test, like because I suffer with anxiety, and like I wouldn't have even been able to get that if I didn't like keep advocating for myself and pushing that I needed it, you know? And like not everyone has that voice to like be able to say that they need it, so
Yeah, and some people might
I
not
think it's
even.
important that we follow up on that.
It is so important.
Yeah.
Like, some people might not even understand or, like, might not realize that they need that sort of support, too. And I was definitely one of those people who I just thought, like, this was normal for everyone. And I couldn't figure out
Yeah.
why I was having so much trouble in school. And now I look back and I'm like, wow, like, that was something that should have been addressed when I was in care. And it wasn't. And it should have been addressed when I was in high school, which even then would be a little late, and it wasn't. And then got to university and still didn't do anything about it. But now I know that I should have been trying to access those supports. And
Yeah, I feel like university where is where it like all comes to play because like they expect you to do this and this amount of time, and it's like you just think like, oh, I'll figure it out, like, but like you can't, you know, because like in high school they might have been more lenient and like letting you stay a little bit longer to do your test, but then you start to realize like, you know, it takes me longer to do my test for a reason, so
Or in high
yeah.
school too, they tend to have smaller classrooms with like maybe 30, like 25 to 30 kids at the most. Whereas in undergrad, for me, my first year, most of my lectures had 600 people in them because it was first year science and everyone had to take chemistry and everyone had to take physics and biology and
Yeah.
And so it's a very different environment to be learning in as well. And some of those strategies that you learned in a small classroom to cope with whatever mental health or disability supports that you needed and that weren't given to you, they don't work when you're in a class with 600 people or when you're in a lab working with various chemicals and there's like
Yeah.
50 other people in the lab too. And yeah, like access to those supports and access to like the ability to be diagnosed with things and access to long-term care when it comes to mental health is really crucial.
Yeah, like I remember like these little tiny like desks that would flip over like chairs in like this huge auditorium with like 800 people in my class. We're all sitting like too close to each other trying to like write our exams. And that's when I knew I'm like, oh, I need a quiet place to work. Like I can't do
I just
Yeah.
remember being alphabetically for chemistry class. We had several midterms and then a final, and I was in the same room for the midterms, and every time I ended up in the left-handed desk because that's just where my name fell alphabetically, and I'm right-handed, just sitting there on a weird angle trying to write my exam and trying to focus, and I was like, this is not working. And I mean, the lefty
Oh
desk is not helping, but just being in that big room with all those people too, really was not great.
Also, like, when it comes to like resources that need to be implemented, I know we mentioned like earlier, Ashley, that like we both kind of struggled in like getting a computer and getting like the electronics you need to like actually survive school. So like I think maybe something could be done about like supplying students with electronics. Like I know it's pretty pricey, but like that's pretty pricey on like Youth In Care too. So maybe if there's like a bursary or like some type of like used technology program or something like that where they could like donate to Youth In Care, like that would be really awesome.
Yeah, I totally agree. Having access to a laptop, also having access to a phone, of course, making sure that everyone
Yeah.
has internet and a modem that works well, not just
Yeah.
especially nowadays too, when you think in the context of COVID, everyone's learning from home. You have to have good internet.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really important. And I think sometimes there's bursaries, or maybe not bursaries, but sometimes there's that ability to like social workers have the ability to provide those supports to people, but not everyone knows about them. And now that I think about it, I don't know if there's like a list of places where you can go to get a laptop if you were a youth in care, or if your youth currently in care, maybe you can ask your social worker, but if you've already left care, then where are you going to go? Who's going to help you
Yeah.
now? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now that you're left care, you're like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
That's really important. Ashley, I just also wanted to ask you that as a youth who have been in and out of care and who has been in the education system and who has went to university and successfully graduated and went on to do her master's, do you have any advice to youth in care who are currently in education or thinking about applying to university? Any strategies and any words of encouragement for them?
I think the one piece of advice that I'd give to any youth in care or youth from care who are thinking about pursuing their education is to not be afraid to ask for help. And that applies in so many ways, be it asking admissions recruitment for help applying or asking financial aid if there's any bursaries and scholarships available for youth who are in care or from care, or asking your social worker for any sort of support, be it bursaries or be it electronics, as we talked about earlier, asking your doctor for help with mental health. All these things are incredibly important and they all come together to make your education journey successful. I know it's hard. I know it can be really hard to ask for help, and it can be really, really hard to make it through school when you have full course load or even half a course load and you have all this homework, and I imagine it's even more difficult now that everyone's working from home and trying to study online all day. I just want to say I believe in you. I know other people do too, but it's possible to make it through university as a youth from care. It's possible to make it in life as well, and I think that's something that maybe we all need to hear. We hear a lot in the news about how there's not many people graduating who are in care or from care, or about how when youth in care reach university, they drop out. And I think we all really need to hear that it is possible to make it. And it's going to be difficult and may take several tries, but you can do it. Ask for help. There are likely some supports available, and while there aren't enough, as we talked about earlier, those will, I know they will be in place in the future as this is part of the advocacy around it. And we've got some really great people, Adoption Council of Canada, at Child Welfare League of Canada, Youth in Care Canada. There's so many groups that are advocating for better supports, and I know they will fall into place in the future.
Yes, and I love that, Ashley. That's amazing advice, and I really appreciate you for saying that. And honestly, like Ashley said, like you are your own best advocate at the end of the day. And unfortunately, the way it is nothing is going to happen unless you make it happen. And that is like the best advice to give is just to ask for help, like Ashley said, because yes, it's literally can seem like very challenging. But at the end of the day, it's what's going to make things happen for you. It's what's going to help you achieve your goals. And we don't always hear, like Ashley said, about success stories, but we have Ashley right here, and she is a success story. And there are so many youth who are success stories who are continuing to pursue their education and continuing to pursue their dreams. And their road to pursuing that is not easy. There's bumps along the way, and you just really have to be resilient and just keep pushing through. And another important advice I want to give is celebrate all your successes, no matter how small, how big. You passed a course, or you got into your dream program or anything like that. You need to celebrate it. You need to own it. You need to keep empowering yourself on your journey. And every time you celebrate a little success, it'll make any challenge or obstacle you go through a little easier to go through, because you'll know, look at all the things I've accomplished. Look at all the things I've done before. I know I'm a strong person, and I know I can get through this.
Totally agree.
I just want to thank all of our listeners today for joining us and listening and tuning into our podcast on education in this series on the road to permanency. I want to thank Ashley for joining me. She gave us some great strategies and also some great methods to go through university. She also gave some great ideas of programs and really just empowered us on our journey through education and the road to permanency. So next week we will be talking about mental health and how that ties in on the road to permanency, and I will also have Ashley and Princess joining us, so I definitely think you should tune in next week. Thank you so much.